We're going through the Gospel of John, and we'll read a passage out of chapter 8 in a minute. But as you may have caught by now, as Charlie's been teaching through John, there are several recurring themes that the author of John is really trying to hit hard on. And so there's several things that are repetitious. Well, this is one of those weeks where some of the themes are some of the ones that Charlie actually talked about 3 weeks ago. As you'll see, we'll read here in a minute. So we thought we'd do something a little different and have some people share their stories and kind of launching off of this passage. And if there's time at the end, then we'll open it up to the audience as well. I'll let that linger and make you nervous, and we'll get there later on, and I'll explain it more. But while I'm reading, why don't the panelists make your way up here, if you would? So John 8, 12 to 20, and we'll read the passage, but we won't camp on it very long. When Jesus spoke again to the people, he said, "I am the light of the world. Whoever follows me will never walk in darkness, but will have the light of life." The Pharisees challenged him. "Here you are, appearing as your own witness. Your testimony is not valid." Jesus answered, "Even if I testify on my own behalf, my testimony is valid, for I know where I came from and where I am going. But you have no idea where I come from or where I'm going. You judge by human standards. I pass judgment on no one. But if I do judge, my decisions are true, because I am not alone. I stand with the Father who sent me. In your own law, it is written that the testimony of two witnesses is true. I am the one who testifies for myself. My other witness is the Father who sent me." Then they asked him, "Where is your Father?" "You do not know me or my Father," Jesus replied. "If you knew me, you would know my Father also." He spoke these words while teaching in the temple courts near the place where the offerings were put, yet no one seized him because his hour had not yet come. So that verse 19, right, I think really gets to the heart of it. He said, "If you knew me, you would know my Father also." So that theme has popped up several different points where he's saying, you know, my teaching is true because the Father sent me, and he's this relationship between Jesus and his Father, he keeps saying in different ways. And so we thought, Charlie and I were discussing this week, noticing that this was already something he talked about, we thought it would be fun to share how our views of God have been impacted by learning more about Jesus. And so how does Jesus color our view of God the Father? And how is our view and perspective of God, our relationship with God, changed over the years? And so these brave souls volunteered. I asked them to go over these questions in general, and this is what we'll open up to the crowd. We can, you know, we can take tangents that are closely related, but here's kind of what we're getting to today. What's your initial perspective of God or your childhood of God? How has that changed? How is Jesus changing the way you view God, and how does that cause you to live differently? So, I know some of you guys have prepared some thoughts, so. Who would like to begin?
Sure.
Sure, Mr. Steve. Why don't you say your name before you start, yeah.
Steve. So initial perspective of God, in terms of my childhood, view of God was dreadful, seriously. It's taken decades to overcome it. This is just weird, but I dreaded, as a child, I dreaded the idea of going to heaven, of living forever, because I grew up in I'll just be careful of labels, a very, very, very conservative, legalistic family and church. And so the picture of God was one of this only angry, judging God. And so the idea of living forever was terrifying to me, of going to heaven and being in the presence of this God. I literally would go to bed at night, and I would try do mental gymnastics, trying to not live forever when I die, but annihilate, so that I would just not experience eternity at all. So, pretty sick. So that was my initial perspective of God, that picture. And we glean it, or I gleaned it from the authority figures in my life, because the church was my whole life then. So the pastors, the succession of pastors, and were all, or seemed to be, angry, yelling, loud men. And to me, a pastor represented God. So why would I want to live forever? That was how I started.
Tim. So I think for me, growing up, I have amazing parents. So before I say anything, I'll just say that I grew up with amazing, amazing parents. But when I was a young man, in my younger years, my dad left, and he would share this openly, so I tend to share it openly. But he found another woman, and he left our house for a couple of years in pivotal times in my life. And my relationship with my father at a young age was one where he was very angry. He was angry, and he was starting a business, and it was stressful, and he was absent. And I think that as children, we tend to view God maybe through what's demonstrated to us, maybe as you described. And so my God was angry and absent, and it was a transactional relationship. You know, you have to give something to get something. And so I grew up from a childhood perspective thinking that way. I guess as I grew a little older and through my, what I'll call my middle years, you know, junior high school, college, there were a group of men that, just individuals really, but they happened to all be men, that came around me and loved me when I didn't feel lovable. And the community of those people. One was an owner of a gas station, and I told the story this week that when I was 16, I stole $250, $300 out of the till one night. And I went home, and I came back the next day, and he called me back into his office, and he sat down with me, and he said, "Hey, Tim, you know, you're a good kid, but last night you stole from me." "No, I didn't." "You know, no, I didn't," I said. "I didn't steal from you." He said, "Yes, you did. You stole from me." "No, no, no, Art, I would not steal from you." He said, "Well, here's the deal. You did steal from me, and you are a good kid, and I do care about you. And the thing that you should know is that if you had asked, I would have given it to you. See, I would give you anything that I had in this shop, but you didn't ask." And I think that I could tell you a dozen stories of men that at key pivotal places, in the most unusual and unexpected places, at a job in a gas station in Portland, Oregon. By the way, you can't pump your own gas there, right? But he loved me, and he loved me in ways that I didn't deserve to be loved. And I think that it was in those days that, you know, my relationship with God began to shift.
I'm Laura.
Hello.
And apparently I am the counterpoint to all of the other things. I grew up in a church. My father's a pastor, and I had a lovely view of God. And so for me, church was the safe place that we went all the time. We were there easily three times a week. We got to do fun stories. We got cookies when we learned about God. We had, you know, Kool-Aid, all the fun things in our life revolved around the church. People there were loving and kind to us. And like I said, my father was the pastor, so he was busy a lot with church things. So church was where we saw our dad the most, frankly. When we were home, Dad was at church doing things, meetings and other things like that. So for me, God was all about the church, not so much about anything outside the church, but the church. And so that's where I had a good view of that, but I didn't have any view of how God worked outside of the church. So that was my formative years there. So
cool. So
one could say Laura drank the Kool-Aid.
Yes. He whispered that to me earlier. So I like, we both recycle jokes a lot. That's good. I like that about you. Okay, moving on. Oh, so maybe speak to a couple key moments or a key shifts in your view of God. And as Laura pointed out, it doesn't have to be bad to good or good to bad. It could just be our understanding of God changes, our relationship to God changes, our posture to Him changes, and the way we picture Him and His posture toward us changes over the years. And I hope in clearer ways. So speak to some moments when some of those shifts happened.
Well, Tim alluded to, I think, a primary influence for maybe all of us is that there has to be somebody influential that enters the picture that changes the picture created by those original picture makers. Well, and, you know, for me, it was several people that, well, one, I had to get out of that environment because they just reinforced the picture. So sometimes that's essential. But found myself in another environment where, you know, it was a male, and that father figure, God figure combined, who was very, ironically, stern, but full of compassion. And that mix did a lot of healing for me in my 20s.
To finish the story, my mom prayed my dad home. 2 years, my dad woke up in Chicago and found his way out of a cab with this other woman and back at our house and choosing to be home. And he went to work on his anger issues. And we bought a car and we began to restore a car together in the garage. I was 14. And so as we restored the car, so our relationship was restored. And my parents reconciled. I used to think there was probably a time in my life where I thought my mom was weak. You know, maybe accepting him back would have been a position of weakness. And, you know, obviously now I understand that differently as a real thing of courage. And I think that my relationship with God began to shift, just as it did with those men like Art that gathered around me. But I'd also tell you that because we were church-going people, and I wrote this down, religion still ruled the day. You know, in my life, in church, we grew up in a church, went on 7 mission trips, you know, as family. And I think religion makes sin the point often. It's not Jesus, it was a religion. And I wrote this down too so I'd remember. Religion seems to want to contain and control. And the only people that don't live don't sin. People that don't live don't sin. And Jesus doesn't seem hyper. He spoke it. Sin is a part of the language, but it's not the story that's unfolding. And I think that that had a significant change in my life. And I'll just briefly share that the other thing is that I became an entrepreneur and had a very tough go running a business. And Hebrews 12:11, right? No discipline seems pleasant at the time, but painful. And I think that in that era of my life that I began to really believe that God loved me, but that life was supposed to be hard. And that my training by the Father, accepting Him as a Father, would need to be more difficult, maybe, and it might end, you know, really bad. And I say all of that because I'm a white man of privilege. And so you begin to see that when I say transactional in the beginning of my statement, that I've grown up as a man of privilege, and even though my business life was hard, somehow I felt entitled to it being better. And that really was reflective of the way of my view of God and Jesus. And I think that Jesus has begun the conversation of shifting that view. It's not transactional, and understanding who I am and that I relate to God through my privilege. And those are the things that are beginning to shift. You know, that's the beginning of this relationship unfolding differently than it ever has before.
Okay. So for me, becoming a parent changed the way I view God and Jesus. Because in our household, there was, we obviously, we went to Awana, we learned Bible verses and all those kinds of things. But the big one that was overarching was, to him who knoweth to do good, and the THs were always there. To him who knoweth to do good and doeth it not, to him it is sin. Mm-hmm. So that was just kind of our overarching thing. So if I went down to the basement to go get something and I noticed that the freezer was ajar and it hadn't been closed all the way and I just decided I didn't want to go do that, I had sinned because I should have known to do that and I didn't. So those kinds of things were always, like you said, Tim, like with the sin was always there. If we did something wrong, first we had to go to our room and pray about it first and then go make amends with whoever we had wronged. But then as a parent, my view of God changed because now I'm, not that we're God-like, but sort of we are, because we're seeing our kids in the kind of loving way that God sees us. And when our kids do something, even if it's a horrible mess, but we know their hearts, were good and in the right place, we appreciate the effort and not necessarily the outcome. And I think that for me, knowing that that's how God views me even more so. He sees the things that I'm trying and failing at, or the mess that I make when I'm trying to do something good, or the fact that I'm just lazy and I need to get a little push to make something happen, i.e. this. That those kinds of things are, I'm viewing my life more and my relationship with God more through that loving parent rather than the mean Santa in the sky who's watching to see if I'm sinning or not.
In terms of influencing our picture, I realized that, like we've said, influential people form our picture or can transform our picture. But I think crisis or tragedy creates a picture, or a picture of God. In my early 20s, I was a black and white thinker, and I underwent just this devastation. And it was a transactional relationship. I did this, God. You didn't do that. And so I just said, well, to hell with this whole thing, and left the faith because my picture of God was this cruel, uncaring God. Why did you let this happen? And then as I got older, things, my thinking changed, and I was no longer black and white thinking, but I began to embrace the ambiguity of life and the gray rather than the black and white, to where, you know, crises and tragedies have hit us in the last 10, 20 years, and they rock me, but they don't drive me away. In fact, they propel me now to God in my desperate faith. So just the whole role of crisis or tragedy can really influence, or has influenced at least my picture of God.
John 6:29, you know, Jesus says the work is to believe in the one I've sent, right? The work is to believe. And I think that that's another core theme in my life, is that the more time I spend looking at Jesus without a religious lens, it's transforming my thinking. And I've come to believe that that everything hinges on loving our neighbor. You know, love God, love our neighbor. Everything hinges on that. And I think that's those are some of the core beginnings of seeing Jesus without a religious view, but seeing Jesus is transformative. And I think that it was influential people. It was people that loved me in core moments that began to show me a Jesus that wasn't religious. And that really began to shift my view, my entire viewpoint. Well, you know, I was
just... You're just being nice.
Yeah.
I think that some of the things that you guys are saying, we've had hard things in our life, but we haven't had the relentless bad things, maybe. And I think that one of the things I did earlier on, before I was married even, I spent some time and I said, I'm just going to study all the things that Jesus did that were surprising, which pretty much is everything that he did that was surprising, out of character, things like that. And I think you're right, Tim. If you start looking at Jesus the way he was, just as a person and God, but the way he interacted with people, and you make that your model, it really does change the way all your interactions are from then on, you know? So.
Yeah, that's been crucial in my development. I like that you're pointing that out, because it's like the way I see, at some point I had to own that my view of God isn't the definitive view of God. This is my perspective on God, and when I'm wrong, that I own that, and I try to change that. But it's like it affects how I respond to God and how I react to Him. So it's kind of beautiful in a way that maybe He allows us to respond to His initiative, you know. And as He changes, as our view of Him changes in our life, it's almost like, in a way, he's taking that first step and demonstrating his love for us and that acceptance. And then it's like, okay, now I know how to relate to you better, because you're not like this, but you're like this instead.
You just used a phrase, as my view of God changed. And I've been thinking about how our view changes is as important as the picture. And in a lot of circles, it's not even appropriate for your view of God to change. That in itself is apostasy in lots of circles. And there's probably more, but two models, to me, in terms of how one forms his or her picture of God, the traditional, I'll say more conservative view, is that you learn certain things about God, and they're all in this box. And so you just kind of memorize them and get those intact in your early years, and then nothing changes about that picture. And you simply then just reinforce for years and years in church and Sunday school and your own Bible studies. And, you know, and now, to me, half of the stuff out there on the conferences, I heard that 40, 50 years ago, is nothing's different. Versus your view evolving and changing, and you're taking in these experiences, and that contradicts this older view, and so you adapt your view and you evolve, and you get these outside sources coming into you that's telling you new information, and you're digesting that rather than repelling it because it's apostasy or false teaching, quote unquote. And so those two models, it's very refreshing to be in that evolving mode. It's like the old view is like, you know, it's praised that nothing has changed. I'm 66 years old and my view of God hasn't changed at all. And I'm rewarded and praised for that in that old view. That's the mark of a mature Christian. That's ridiculous. Think about it developmentally. Because as a 10-year-old, if you're still walking around talking and thinking and believing what you did when you were 10, we call that politely developmentally delayed. But in the Christian circles, we reward it as a mark of faithfulness that nothing's changed.
That was good. No, that was good. Thank you for sharing.
I love it. I guess one of the things that I've realized through Jesus, right, judgment I think one of the things that growing up that I had a lot of was judgment. I felt I knew what was right and what was wrong, and that I somehow had become God's moral agent on earth. And I think one of the things that Jesus has continued to show me is that I'm not God's moral agent on earth. And if I'm supposed to love my neighbor and I'm supposed to go take the plank out of my own eye, not the speck out of somebody else's, right? The plank. And it's easy when you're a person of privilege, which I consider myself just based on where I was born, who I was born to, and my life experience, in essence, to be a person of privilege to surround myself with people like me. And I think one of the things that Jesus showed me, the more I see Jesus, the more I realize that the work in believing is to live with transformed thinking. And so one of the things that's happening to me, and this kind of answers 2 and 3, is that being intentional about not just being with people like me. You know, we went through a whole journey in this church recently, right? About people that may be different or think differently than me. And it was separating and divisive. And we meant it to be binding us together. And I grew up in a place where we had a view about the way things should be. And for me, even being with you in the struggle and choosing to live and be with you differently, living more out the way that I see the Jesus that I'm coming to continuously know differently, is causing me to live with transformed thinking. And the tension of that, somehow, that tension is the beauty. That's a new life. New life. And so that's right where I am, you know. That's just raw, really. And church always seemed to be a very difficult place to live with tension. Right? This is one of the most difficult places. This being together and being with people of different views has not been my experience of an organized group of people. And yet, you, right, are choosing to live in the tension. And that seems to be a reflection of the Jesus that I want to know, that I'm continuously knowing.
So I think what Steve was saying about having the idea of God tidily put in a box, and then when you said something comes into your life that you have to decide, does that fit in my box or does it not fit in my box? You have those two choices. You can either figure out a way to explain why it doesn't fit in your box, or you can either abandon the box, I guess, or you have to find a new way to make it fit into the box. And that is filled with tension, and that is filled with uncertainty and discomfort, and it is hard. But I think that's where the richness is. And I think that you're right, Tim, this place is a place where people are brave, and people are brave in sharing the fact that they don't have things figured out and they're in a transformational stage, or something happens that this was my box and it is not fitting in any way, shape, or form, and I do not know what to do with this. Help me. You know, it seems to fit in your box. How is that possible? So I think we're finding ways that we can help each other, and I think that pleases God.
Yeah. Well, and I like that you guys are speaking. I didn't actually ask the last question, but I like that. We'll open up to the crowd, but that you're pointing out there's this there's a cause and effect relationship between what we believe and what we know about God to how we feel about God, and then what we do. You know, the knowing, feeling, and doing, that's all kind of cyclical. So it's like if our view of God changes, then our posture, our relationship with God changes, then that should affect how we act and how we live, that it's all connected because we're whole people, so we're seeking out to live as a whole person. So that's where I think that question was designed to highlight, and you guys did it beautifully. So do you guys want to say anything else before we open it up?
I'd just say one last thing that was on my heart as I prayed and thought about this time. A friend of mine said to me recently, if you want to go broad, if you want to touch a lot of people, go deep with a few. And I think if you look at Jesus and his walk on this earth, he changed the world through a few, right? And I just say that in my recent life, in going deep with a few, I know I'm changing, deeply changing, transforming. So that was on my heart.
Thank you.
In terms of my picture of God, I think this really describes it these days. And it's a scene from the C.S. Lewis's The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. And Laura, you referred to Christ, i.e. God's unpredictability. And if I can just release myself to accept that rather than insist that God has to act in this manner, because that didn't work real well. He doesn't seem to care about that. But this newly developed picture, I think Lewis describes it well, where Susan and Lucy approach Mr. and Mrs. Beaver, and they want them to tell them about Aslan, the lion, which is the Christ figure. And so Mr. Beaver replies, I tell you, he is the king of the woods. Don't you know who is the king of the beasts? Aslan. He's a lion. The lion, the great lion. And Susan asks, well, is he quite safe? I shall feel rather nervous about meeting a lion. And Mr. Beaver says, safe? Safe? Who said anything about being safe? Of course he isn't safe, but he's good. He's good. He's the king, I tell you. That, to me, is a beautiful picture that I'm striving for.
Thank you. Thank you guys for sharing, if anything sparks. So we've got maybe 5 minutes left or so. I wanted to open it up and see if anyone had something that was sparking. So let's focus on the last two, because I think the first question, we could go down a lot of rabbit trails. So how is Jesus changing the way you view God right now, presently, or in the last couple months? And is that causing you to live differently? If so, how?
I've taken a very interesting walk this last year with cancer. And things aren't settled yet, but to trust God the way I used to trust him and pray the way I used to believe didn't work. And I'm wondering, okay, now what? You know, I wondered about my lifestyle. That didn't work when I trusted God him there either. So I just finished a book by The Sin of Certainty by Ennis. It is a fabulous book. And all you guys up there this morning talk about it, that we are to trust God not in what we believe the church to do or what we believe individuals to do. But our walk with God through Jesus is our own individual walk. And I just believe this was a fabulous thing you guys did this morning.
Thank you, Randy. Yeah, Corey.
So I read a book once that I don't remember, but yes. You guys made me think of it, you know, several comments about, you know, we used to put God in this box or whatever, and I think the perspective there was that it's actually us, it's actually me that's in the box, and what I have is different windows to look out and see God, and so I've got the Bible, and I've got my tradition that I grew up with, and then I go to a community, and I find other people that see God differently, and they open up other windows for me, and so The challenge is to recognize that every one of those windows has some validity. Everything, you know, the pretty conservative church that I grew up in, there's a lot of truth there. And so as I find other perspectives, to not throw that out, but to recognize the beauty and the truth in all of it.
I was thinking about that earlier, that you don't throw out your old view completely, because if your view is simply formed out of reaction, any view formed out of reaction is always exaggerated and distorted. So you just you don't end up with a better view. You just feel better about now this new distorted view. So it's just a caution as we form our picture, that make sure it's not out of simple reaction to our past. I appreciate that. Yes, yes. He said that view is only valuable for judging your old view.
I think the thing, something Charlie said last week, actually, the picture of Jesus and the adulterous woman, and I always knew Jesus was kind to the woman. Like, that part of the story has always been pretty obvious to me, but that Jesus was kind to the Pharisees too. That, I mean, and it goes to what you guys were saying about you don't toss your old view. There's stuff there. He saw value in them too, and he loved them too. And it just made me want to model Jesus's kindness much more broadly than I tend to. And that's just something that's really, I want to live into that. I want to do that differently. So.
Isn't she amazing?
They're married. Not neglecting the comment, though. Who else? Who else has some thoughts about how Jesus is shaping? Susan, yeah.
I just want to point out some things that I noticed that you were all speaking about, and that is you all portrayed Jesus as a father figure or a masculine figure. And when Steve was here, and also in his book, he talked about how God is genderful. And I think a part of my journey has been recognizing that in 2016 in the United States of America, as a woman, I still have a lot of masculine traits because it's so appreciated in our society. Having masculine traits is a good thing. Having feminine traits is still considered less than adequate. So when I think of the box that we put God in, I like to think of it as a puzzle piece. And a lot of people start with the edges and then they piece together their beliefs and they try and see where things fit. But they always try and fit them within the edges. And what I've learned, if I want to embody a genderful personhood, I need to recognize there are no edge pieces. I just have to do it's harder work to piece everything together. But to have no edges is so much more beautiful.
I like that. Thank you, Susan. Well, let's wrap up there. Thank you guys for sharing. Can you guys applaud them for their efforts? All right, I'll say a benediction to close us. So would you please stand and join me for the benediction? May we embrace our journey of knowing God. And if our views of God are too simple, may they be more complex. If our views of God are too complex, may they be more simple. And above all else, may we emulate his love in all we do. In Jesus' name, amen.